All right, let's dive into something that, well, on the surface sounds pretty dry. We're talking zoning laws, but trust me, this one gets interesting. It's the case of Worth v. Selden, all the way back from 1975. And the Supreme Court case, well, it tackles how zoning was used to keep certain people out of a whole town. Now, you sent us a ton of sources on this, court opinions, briefs, even some podcast guidance. So I'm guessing you all are as curious as I am about, like, is this just a legal footnote or does Worth v. Selden still matter today?
Oh, it definitely still matters. Worth v. Selden, it's a landmark case, really, especially when we're talking about the concept of standing. You know, who has the right to actually sue in a situation like this?
Okay, so back up for a sec. Paint the picture for us. What was going on in Penfield, New York, that landed them in front of the Supreme Court?
So Penfield had this zoning ordinance, and it was, well, it's pretty extreme. Even for the suburbs.
Okay. How extreme are we talking?
90% of the town's land was zoned for single-family homes. You know, those big standalone houses.
Got it. Single-family homes, 90% of the land. What's the problem?
Less than 1%. Less than 1% was zoned for apartments or anything that you might consider affordable housing.
Look, hold on. Less than 1%. I mean, that's practically zoning out entire groups of people.
Yeah.
So no wonder people were upset. This wasn't just about, like, oh, we want our town to look a certain way. This was, I mean, this seems pretty intentional.
Exactly. And that was the argument in the lawsuit. It wasn't just about aesthetics or keeping things quiet. This was about exclusion. People felt that, you know, their constitutional rights were being violated. And they even pointed to, like, several federal statutes to back up their claims.
Okay. So we're talking potential civil rights issue masquerading as a zoning dispute.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So who are the brave souls that decided to take on an entire town in court?
Well, it was actually a pretty diverse coalition. You had some of the low-income residents, you know, the ones who were directly impacted by this housing shortage, who just, they couldn't afford to live in Penfield even if they wanted to.
Makes sense. I mean, they're the ones on the front lines of this.
Then you also had some taxpayers from nearby Rochester, and their argument was interesting. They felt like Penfield was basically exporting its responsibility for affordable housing onto them.
Okay, so like their argument is Penfield zoning is pushing the affordable housing burden onto Rochester, their city, leading to higher taxes for them. Clever argument, but I imagine kind of hard to prove.
Yeah, it's a little bit more indirect, but they were trying to make that case.
And did they have any luck?
Well, we'll get to that. And it wasn't just individuals either. You also had the Rochester Home Builders Association jump in.
Okay, the builders, what was their angle?
They represented, you know, construction firms who wanted to actually build, you know, more diverse housing options, but they were being blocked by Penfield zoning.
Yeah, if you can't get a permit to build something other than a McMansion, well, guess what you're going to build?
Exactly. So you've got this whole crew, right, with different angles, all basically saying, hey, this zoning is causing real harm.
Okay, so a lot of people with a lot of different arguments. But here's the thing, and this is where I think it gets kind of interesting for our listeners. The Supreme Court wasn't actually deciding whether Penfield zoning was good or bad policy.
You got it. Hmm? They zeroed in on something way more specific. But frankly, I think a lot of people find it confusing. They were looking at standing.
The legal weeds.
Oh.
But for our law students out there, break it down for us. What is standing? Why does it matter?
Okay, so standing, in simple terms, means you can't just, like, dislike a law or feel annoyed by it. You have to actually prove that you personally were harmed by it in a concrete way. It's not enough to say, oh, this zoning makes life hard for people like me. You got to show how it hurt you directly.
So it's not enough to be sympathetic. You got to have, like, receipts, hard evidence that you were wronged.
Precisely.
Seems tough.
Yeah, it can be. The Supreme Court was really worried about opening the floodgates to lawsuits based on just, you know, general grievances or hypothetical scenarios. They wanted clear, traceable harm.
Okay, so that's where things get tricky for the folks suing Penfield, right?
Right. So let's take those low-income residents. They claim they couldn't find housing in Penfield, which, you know, on the surface, seems like a pretty straightforward case.
Yeah, seems obvious.
But the court, they dug deeper. They said, okay, you can't find housing, but did you not find housing specifically because of the zoning ordinance? Like, could you prove it was the zoning and not just the market or your own choices that caused the problem?
So it's like a legal detective novel. You got to connect the dots between the law and the actual injury. No assumptions allowed.
That's a great way to put it. And the court also brought up another key legal concept here, and that's redressability.
Redressability? That sounds intimidating.
It's not as complicated as it sounds. It basically means Even if you were harmed, could a court decision actually fix the problem? It's a question of practicality, right? If a court ruling wouldn't actually solve the issue, well, then the case might be dismissed.
So it's not just about pointing fingers and yelling, "You hurt me." It's about showing the court, okay, here's how you can make this right.
Exactly.
So what about those groups that join the lawsuit, like the Home Builders Association? Don't organizations, like, usually have more legal weight to throw around?
You would think so, but Worth v. Selden made it clear. Groups can only sue if their individual members have a valid injury.
So even if you have, like, a whole association behind you, it still comes down to that individual harm. You got to connect the dots to a real person.
Right. And that was a big deal. The court was basically saying, look, we need concrete evidence, not just hypothetical scenarios, and we need to know that court decision can actually make a difference.
Okay. Makes sense, but also kind of tough for anyone trying to challenge, like, systemic issues.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that focus on individual harm might miss the forest for the trees.
And that's exactly where the dissenting opinions come in. They had a very different take on all of this. They argued that this whole emphasis on super specific individual harm, it just ignored the reality of how these kinds of zoning practices actually play out in the world.
Okay, I'm definitely ready to hear what the dissenters had to say. Spill the tea.
So the dissent in Worth, it makes you think about how legal rules sometimes, you know, they don't quite capture everything when you're dealing with these big systemic problems. Like Justice Brennan, he really went to bat for those low-income residents who were suing.
Yeah, what did he say?
Well, he thought it was kind of ridiculous to act like Penfield zoning was just this thing, you know, floating out there in space. Like, it had nothing to do with the actual housing market.
Yeah, come on. We all know if a town makes it basically impossible to build anything but, like, mansions, well, guess what happens to housing prices?
Right. And that was Brennan's point. He's like, demanding this super specific connection between the zoning and each person's inability to find a place to live, it's too technical. It misses the bigger picture. He felt that the plaintiff's experiences, you know, the fact that they were struggling to find decent, affordable housing, that should have been enough to establish standing.
It's like he was saying, look, sometimes common sense has to play a role here, right? The law can't always capture the full reality of how people are affected. So what about those Rochester taxpayers, the ones who felt like they were shouldering the burden? Did Brennan have anything to say about them?
Oh, yeah, he did. He thought the court was being a little naive in dismissing their claim as too indirect. His argument was, when one town adopts this kind of exclusionary zoning, well, it basically forces the burden of affordable housing onto neighboring communities. You can't just draw a line in the sand and say, well, what happens outside of Penfield is none of our business.
It's all connected, right? Like pushing a balloon on one side makes it bulge out on the other.
Exactly. And then you have Justice Douglas. He also dissented, and he took it even a step further. He felt very strongly that civil rights cases, especially ones dealing with systemic issues like housing discrimination, well, they should be treated differently when it comes to standing.
Okay, so he's saying civil rights cases might need a different standard. Interesting. Why did he think that?
He even went back and compared Worth to an earlier case, Trafficante v. Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, where tenants had successfully sued their apartment complex for racial discrimination. And Douglas was like, look, the court needs to be more flexible in these situations. We have to recognize that the harm isn't always going to be, you know, neatly packaged and individualized.
So it's like he's saying sometimes the stakes are just too high and the potential for harm is so big that the court shouldn't get bogged down in these, like, procedural hurdles.
Exactly. It raises these big questions, right, about the balance between legal rules and social justice. Like, is the focus on individual concrete harm sometimes blinding the courts to these larger patterns of injustice?
It's a powerful argument for sure. So we've got this real clash here between the majority's view of standing, this very strict interpretation, and then these dissenting opinions that are calling for a more nuanced approach, especially in these civil rights cases. But what does it all mean practically? Like, how did Worth v. Selden actually change things on the ground?
Well, I think it's safe to say Worth definitely raised the bar when it comes to challenging zoning laws. It basically sent a clear message to lawyers. If you're going to go after a town for discriminatory zoning, you got to have your ducks in a row Vague accusations, hypotheticals, that's not going to fly.
So dot your I's and cross your T's. Be specific.
Exactly. Specificity is key. Lawyers had to become, like, master storytellers, right? Meticulously building their cases, bringing in concrete examples like, here are the permits that were denied, or here's the housing project that was blocked. They had to show how real people's lives were directly affected by that specific zoning ordinance.
And it wasn't just proving harm, right? You also had to show that a court order could actually fix the problem.
Absolutely. Redressability became even more important after Worth. Lawyers couldn't just say, oh, the court should declare this zoning bad and call it a day. They had to demonstrate that a win in court would actually lead to real, tangible change.
Okay, so a lot more pressure on lawyers to not just bring the case, but to show how the court can actually fix things. What about, you mentioned those organizations earlier, like Metro Act. How did this affect them? Did Worth make it harder for them to fight for their cause?
I'd say definitely. You know, the court really emphasized that organizations can only sue if their individual members have standing. So it wasn't enough for Metro Act to just champion this broad idea of fair housing. They had to find those individuals who could demonstrate that direct personal harm caused by the specific zoning law they were challenging.
So they couldn't just be a voice for the cause. They had to have actual people with, like you said, receipts.
Right. I mean, Worth forced organizations to really shift gears. Instead of just broad advocacy, they had to focus on identifying and supporting individual cases that could actually meet those strict standing requirements.
So more focused, more strategic.
Definitely. I think Worth really forced everyone to think about litigation in a new way.
It's wild how this one case about zoning, something that seems so local, ended up having this massive impact on legal strategy, on the way we think about access to justice even. Like more than a footnote, it's a whole shift in the legal landscape.
Yeah, it's a great example of how, you know, even a case that seems really narrow, it can have these ripple effects that touch upon these fundamental issues of fairness, equality, the role of the courts.
So, big picture, how should we view Worth v. Selden today? Is it a win for local control, a setback for civil rights, or is it like way more nuanced than that?
That's the million-dollar question, and it's one that people are still debating. It really is a tough question. I mean, on the one hand, you could say Worth was a victory for people who believe in, you know, strong local control. That idea that towns and cities, they should have a lot of power to decide how they develop, how they grow.
So it's like a shield against the feds coming in and saying, nope, you got to do things our way.
Right. And supporters of Worth will say, hey, it keeps those federal courts from getting involved in every single zoning dispute in the country. It lets communities kind of, you know, shape their own character for better or for worse.
And I bet the folks who see Worth as like a setback for civil rights would say that for worse part can get pretty bad.
Oh, absolutely. Critics will argue that Worth basically made it way too hard to go after exclusionary zoning, especially those policies that end up hurting, you know, lower income communities, minority communities. By making standing so strict, it became much harder to hold towns accountable, even if they weren't like explicitly saying, we're trying to keep these people out.
So it's that tension we keep coming back to. Local control versus fairness. No easy answers.
Definitely not. And that tension, I mean, it's still playing out today. You see it in the fight for affordable housing in cities all over the country. Worth v. Selden, it's part of that conversation, whether people realize it or not.
So Worth's legacy is still very much alive. Has there been any pushback? Have folks tried to, I don't know, find ways around Worth?
Yeah, for sure. There have been efforts to kind of, I guess you could say, soften the blow of Worth, both through new laws and just like creative legal strategy.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Well, some people argue we need new laws that would make it easier to prove discriminatory intent, even if it's not like blatant and out in the open. Others have focused on building really, really strong cases at the state level where the rules for standing might be a little different.
But maybe you can't win at the federal level, but maybe there's a path at the state level.
Right. But those efforts, I mean, they often run into a brick wall. You know, there are groups out there who see Worth v. Selden as almost like sacred ground. Like, this is crucial for protecting local decision making, and we can't touch it.
So it's this constant tug of war. Local control, fairness, legal strategy. It's a lot. And it makes this whole deep dive even more interesting, honestly. I mean, we started with what seemed like this kind of dry zoning case, and now we're talking about federalism, civil rights, access to justice, the whole way our communities are shaped.
It's amazing, right, how the law, it all connects. And a case like Worth, even if it seems really technical, It can expose these deep cracks, these tensions that run through our society.
It just goes to show, zoning is not boring. It's about power, who has it, who doesn't, and who gets left behind.
Well said. And I think Worth v. Selden, it reminds us that winning in court, well, that doesn't always mean progress. Sometimes the fight for fairness, it takes a lot more than that.
Truth. Well, huge thanks for walking us through all of this. This has been a fascinating deep dive into Worth v. Selden. And I have a feeling our listeners are going to be seeing this case everywhere now.
I hope so. It's one of those cases that really makes you think.
For sure. To all our listeners, keep those legal minds sharp, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.